So an interesting Gemara was brought to my attention in Gemara in Bracha, Samach Alf and Mavez. It's just kind of strange. So the basic statement, which this is just a statement which caught my attention, but I'll go back and just give you some more context. But basically the statement is, Rava says that Lo Ivri Alma, the world was only created, Ella, for, but for, the world is not created, but for Lirishi Gemuri or Litzadiki Gemuri. The world was only created for Tzadik, Rishon Gemurim and Tzadikim Gemurim. Okay? And he gives an example. Like Achav ben Imri, this is the evil king Achav, was the Tzarasha Gemur, and Reb Chanina ben Dosa, who is the Tzadik Gemur. Okay? So, that's an interesting statement, right? So, sounds, you know, difficult to understand. I mean, I could understand saying the world is created for a Tzadik Gamor, but a Rasha Gamor, how could it be created for a Rasha Gamor? I mean, Rasha Gamor is seemingly the person who uses Bechira improperly, who's the antithesis of God's plan in the Bria, if anything. So to say the world is created for a Rasha Gamor seems hard to understand. Is he better than a Minani somehow? Right?
Also,
absolute Rasha? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I've heard this before, this Gemara.
You have?
Yeah, one question I've always sort of had is, like, is it saying that, they're trying to say that, like, the entire existence of the world has to do with, comes down to, like, these two people's existence? Or is it, like, vis-a-vis people, these are the two categories that it was intended for in some way or another?
Okay.
Because, like, you're going to say that, really, like, the only purpose of the world is for these two types of people, not for, like, the sake of glorifying Hashem.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The other
creation. Oh, yeah? Okay, good question. So what would you think you'd have the appropriate way to hear the statement, someone tells you about it? What's the way to proceed? How would you try to analyze this thing or try to understand it? Just a methodology point. What should be your first step?
The virtues of those two types.
Okay. Even before that. It's a trick question. So you're going to have the trick answer? That's the hint. The answer is, check out the source. Okay? Because oftentimes people quote Chazals, sometimes there's a context to Chazals, right? So sometimes the Gemara, when taken in an appropriate context, you'll see has something, some explanation. First of all, you get context. Second of all, you get Rashi and Tosfos, or whatever commentaries are that's being quoted. Okay, and there are subtleties. So, if someone quotes something for you, sometimes there's a subtlety in the way the thing is said that you're not going to pick up on by the way somebody's quoting it to you. So, I think in general, if you hear some sort of chazal and you actually want to think about it, you know, your kid comes home and tells you some chazal and you actually want to think about it. It happened to me the other day. One of the kids, you know, Shlomo was telling me some story. I don't even remember. Some address I never heard. Oh, about Shlomo's throne. That it has some sort of special thing that it turns into this, into a lion. I don't know. I never really heard of it before, or vaguely. But if I actually want to analyze it, it doesn't help just to take the superficial version that you hear, because Chazal write in a way that they express themselves in a way that points you towards the ideas, or there are clues and hints at the idea. So, just like in science, if you hear about some sort of experiment, you're not going to try to figure it out until you play with it and you look at it firsthand and you kind of see, get used to the different changes, you know, you get a sense of what's actually going on. The more information you have, the more you can grab hold of the thing and look for clues and subtleties, the better you are. So I think, you know, especially nowadays with like search engines and Google and whatever, it's pretty easy to find any, not always, but usually you could find things. You know, so if someone tells you some random chazal, some measure, some anything, it shouldn't take you that long, you know, to find it. It used to be you'd have to be lucky and everything to be able to find these things. How are you supposed to find it? But nowadays, you know, this Gemara I happen to look it up as a book, whatever. Not on that, you know, but in a book which I have, which has quotes. But I'm sure I could have found it with Google or search engine. So now you find the Gemara, look it up. Okay? So, you know, there's nothing wrong with thinking superficially at first, but just know that, yeah, you know, you'll see it inside. Yeah. Okay. So that's my first point. Okay? And a lot of times, Chazals are taken out of context and interpreted in ways that people, you know, that we naturally project onto it, and you hear Chazal and you think, oh, finally, some confirmation for what I've thought all along. But, you know, that's not really being honest with the Chazal. So, that being the case, let's see what it says. So, the Gemara really is in a bigger context, which says like this. It says, Tanya Rizigli, Tzadikim, it compares Tzadikim and Hashem. We're doing the thing about, okay, so it says, Tzadikim, Yetzahara Shelftam. So, Tzadikim, the Yetzahara, I'm sorry. Yetzer Tov Shelftan. Their Yetzer Tov judges them, rules over them.
What word Shelftan?
Shelftan, like a shofet. Shenem Arvelibi Chalal Bekirbi. My heart is empty within me. Okay, so Rashi says like this. It says, okay, so it says, Arvelibi Chalal Bekirbi. Yetzahara harayu kemeis bekirbi. Chalal is like a corpse. So it says, my heart is like dead within me. So it means my yetzahara is harayu kemeis bekirbi, sheyesh biyadi l'chofo. It's like I have a dead yetzahara. It means I have full ability to control my yetzahara. That's Dovra Mal talking. Okay, and Talmud Kavtas. I think it's in Talmud. So he's saying, yeah, is that tzaddik is yetzer tov guards him. It controls him. He has full, you know. Fine. Yerushalayim yetzer ra shoftan. In Rishon, it's the opposite. It's a ra. Shenamar ne'um pesha l'rasha bekerev levi ein pachad olkem l'neged enough. So the words of staying of a sin to a rasha in his heart, there's no fear of God in front of his eyes. So Rashi says, Amar David bekerev levi yesh ish bekirvi levi yashan ve'omer ani. Okay, Kilomar. So Rashi explains. I mean, he's so cryptic. Sheyetzahara omer l'rasha. Yetzahara says to the rasha, Al yehi pachad olkem l'neged enecho. There shouldn't be any fear of God in front of your eye. Alma yetzahara shoftan ad shemarchiko. So the yetzahara guards, rules him and such that it distances she'enem espachim yotzah. So it's so much so that it basically removes the fear of God. Right, the Yitzhara basically tells him in a convincing way, apparently, that Ein Elokim, right? Ein Elokim, right? Ein Pachad Elokim. Okay. So it's describing the different states of the Tzaddik and of the Rasha. Okay? Where they're almost absent to the opposite side of their personality. Okay. So then it says like this. Beinanim zevezeh shoftam. So Beinani are ruled by both. Right? Shenemar yamud liyamin avyon lehoshia mishoftei nafsha. Okay? So it says that he stands on his right. I think maybe it means God stands on the right of a poor person to save him from the garters, the shoftim of his soul. So it's plural. So it sounds like it means Rashi says Shema Mina. It says Hashem Shema Mina Yesh Lecha Adam Sheyesh Al Nafsho Shnei Shoftim. So saying Hashem stands him by a person on his right side to guard him from the two judges which he has. So he has two Shoftim which rule him, and namely, it's interpreting it to mean the Yetzer and the Yetzer Tov. So it means God, I guess, gives him assistance to help him deal with this battle which goes on in him. So that's a Beinoni. Beinoni is basically an instruct. Okay, fine. Then it says like this. Amar Rava. So Rava says, Kigon Anu, Beinana. We, us, we're Beinana. Okay? So, Amar Le Abaye, you're Beinana. Lo Shelvig Mar Chayel, Chal Beria. But if that's true, right, if the mouth of you're from the Beinana, there's no Tzadik Gomor in the world. You, Rava, you're telling me you're a Beinani. Well, then there's no such thing as a Tzadik. I mean, Rava is the great Tzadik. So what you're saying is, and it's like almost like, what's the original statement anyways? Like, who are you talking about? Who is, you know, one-sided? But that's what I was basically saying. We're being, and we don't have that state where we're totally ruled by Yetzer Tov. More of we're totally by Yetzer Tov, we're in the middle. Okay, fine. Fine. Now that Rava continues, Amar Rava, lo ivri alma el rishi gemura el tzaddik gemura. So the same Rava was saying we're all beninim. He's saying the world is only created for tzaddik gemura mafarsham. Okay, Rashi. You know, a little further. Amar Rava, leida inish benafshi im tzaddik amarum lav. A person, I don't know what he means here, and Rashi doesn't explain, but means somehow like a person should know about himself whether he's a tzaddik gemura or not. A person can know about himself, should know. I don't know exactly what that means. And then it says, Amar Rav, lo ibri alma ala acha ben imri ulu chanin ben dosa. The world is created only for acha ben imri and for chanin ben dosa. Now explain. So acha ben imri holom hazah. This world is for acha ben imri. Ulu rabbi chanin ben dosa holom haba. Okay, so that's important. Right, so he's clarifying. And it says the world is created for tzadik gomor rosh gomor, he's saying the different parts of the world. The Olam Hazeh is created for the Rosh HaGamor, and the Olam Haba is created for the Tzadik Gamor. So Rashi says, Rashi Gamori, he says, Olam Hazeh, oh, this world, She'ein Lohem Be'olam Haba Klom. So the Tzadik, the Rishayim Gamor have nothing in Olam Haba. Zero. V'tzrichem Lito Schar Ankan, but yet they have some Schar. Okay, everyone does certain good deeds, even Rosh HaGamor apparently. So they have to get tzar. So God rewards them here. Kigon achav ben emri. Kigon achav shay asher meod. He's very, very wealthy. The kamarle ben hadad kaspechol zav chaliyu. Ben hadad, I believe, was another king, maybe of Aram. So then he said to him, your gold and silver should be to me. So in other words, he's another wealthy person is saying about achav, oh, you know, like someone who kings fantasize about, that's got to be, you know. So that's what he's saying, is that this world is created for a guy like him. Because he's got everything in this world. Any schar he has is going to be in this world. Because he's the Rosh HaGamor, so he's not going to get any schar in Olam Haba. So everything is going to have to go into Olam Haba. But the tzaddikei gemuri, when it's saying Olam Haba, it's for tzaddikim gemurim, Olam Haba. That's a reference to Olam Haba. She'ein lohem ba'olam hazaklam. They don't have anything in this world. Kigon Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa shedai lo v'kav charuv me'er Shabbos l'er Shabbos. So Chanina ben Dosa said that it's enough for me to have a kav of a boxer, some small measure of a boxer, something like that, from me'er Shabbos l'er Shabbos, like once a week. So he's saying basically, in this world he has almost nothing, practically virtually nothing, and therefore he's everything Olam Haba. So Olam Haba was created for him.
Just a superficial question. Yeah. I mean, if aspects of Olam Hazeh, physical pleasure. I mean, there's other things a person has in this world. I mean, I'm sure he wasn't suffering from it.
He
didn't care for that. I mean, that wasn't what his life was about. His life was about other things that also happen in this world.
Yes, but I guess he's saying is that there are otherworldly things. Presumably means Chachma. He was a unique person who his energy was on Chachma.
Right.
Which is basically but saying...
When we say Olam Hazeh, that's not... Like,
well, I guess we have to figure out what it means. I don't know. We have to figure out what it means. But it's saying... So it sounds like he's saying he's not getting any Schar in Olam Hazeh.
Any Schar, okay, fine.
So Schar is coming Olam Hazeh. So now God is going to have to... So God made Olam Hazeh for him. Because he's getting everything in Olam Haba. So the Rosh is getting everything in Olam Hazeh, nothing in Olam Haba. Tzad is getting everything in Olam Haba, not Olam Hazeh. So God's, the world, this world is created for the Rishon Gemurim, and that world is created for the Tzadik Gemurim. Okay? That's the end of the Gemurim. Okay, so immediately, as you may have suspected, you see the Gemara, you have some direction here. There's at least, I mean, it makes its own problems, but it's certainly not the way it sounds at first sight. This Olam Hazeh Olam Haba element is certainly part and parcel of trying to understand it. And if you're going to try to come up with a theory which didn't take that into account, then you're missing an important piece of information. Right? And that's not explaining it, and Rashi explaining it. Right? So we're not in the dark anymore. Okay? But maybe we have more problems, but problems are good. They help us, help us get in our direction. Yeah. Okay, so any questions? Okay, so any questions?
Yeah, I feel like this whole, it kind of gets more complicated now in a way, because it feels like well, was the world really only created, and was Olhava only created for, like,
right,
like you said, this one aspect of...
Right. Okay. And this one guy, or this
yeah,
one group
I mean,
of guys?
To me it looks like there's, like, a whole complexity involved in,
right,
like, the creation and its purpose, and
right,
this is, like, dwindling it down to, like,
right,
one component.
And even Rava is saying, is we're abandoning him. Rava, the one who's
yeah,
saying this, and we're abandoning him. So it turns out it's not even for guys like Rava. Right? Just for this one Chanir ben Dosa and one Achav, the whole universe, whole world is created for two people?
It's like I want to change the language and say, for the complete Tzaddik, Olhava was created. It's for him.
Okay. And for the
complete
Rasha?
For the
complete
Rasha, well, he just gets his reward in this world. That's the only, for him, that's the only reason why the world was created. To give him his brief moment of reward, then it will be done for him.
But what does that mean, like, for him, this is the reason the world was created? Like, does each person get to have their
own reason?
For other
people, there's much more appreciation for, like, the scope of the world and for its function. But that, for this guy, he only really can experience one aspect of the creation of the universe.
But then it's more just talking about
him,
what he experiences in the world.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I want to change the...
Oh, I understand, I understand. Yeah, right. And then it's almost tautological, though, right? It's not just saying, like, Rasha Gamor, what does Rasha Gamor mean? Someone who's only involved in the
physical. Right, right, yeah.
So, well, that's
that
all
works
I
for
know.
Me, that's good.
It sounds like it's somehow describing what the world is created for. Something like that about God or something, not just saying.
Right.
On the phone, are we good? Clear? Any questions?
It's also interesting that I think
good,
I've heard
yeah,
before, maybe from like Rebbe, a tape or something, that like looking at the world as like a forum for reward and punishment is like a very infantile way of looking at the creation.
Oh, there goes my shot. I'm just kidding.
It's like, it's kind of a Christian view almost,
okay,
like that God is the punisher and the rewarder, and like that's the whole...
Okay.
The whole of it.
Okay.
Just
yeah, just saying. Okay, just ruling that one out.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, did someone on the phone say they had something, or you just said yes? What's that?
We're good.
You're good. Okay, good.
Yeah, I actually don't even understand. I mean, like, it sounds like superficially, like it makes sense, but it doesn't even make any sense. I'm not getting any, like, meaning of that. What do you mean, this purpose of the world? Do you mean, like, if it weren't for...
Yeah, so it's
for this, for this, but then God wouldn't have created the world, and
right,
I guess it just doesn't,
right,
it has no meaning to me. I
right,
have a question because it's not even
right,
understand it.
Right, right, right. Are we just conjecturing? Like, what does the Maharam just sat back and tried to figure out why he didn't create the world? Who did he doesn't create the world for? I mean, he created the whole world. There's a lot of different stuff in the world. What does it even mean? Right. Just sounds like such a massive claim. Is there a proof to this?
It just also doesn't make sense in the reverse, that if it weren't for rewarding, as I think what my father was saying, weren't for rewarding the Russia, then there would be no purpose to this world. It's like not...
Right. You're right.
Meaningful.
Right. Right, I mean, why didn't he create the world, this world, for other people also? What about Rava?
The tzaddik is not getting Olhava without Olhaza, so
right,
he has to do something Olhava to get it, so
yeah, right,
if it weren't for that, then it doesn't
yeah,
make
right,
any sense.
Right, right, right. What about for all other tzaddikim who have Olhaza and Olhava? What about them?
I'm just saying, in a practical sense, you need Olhaza in order to get to Olhava, so you can't say that if
right,
it doesn't have that purpose. It's
right,
not, it doesn't make sense.
And you could say the ultimate purpose. Like that could be a means. Just because there's a means, you could type it, say a thing which is like an ultimate purpose.
Okay.
Like, let's say you say man is the ultimate purpose of creation.
Right.
So, yeah, we can't have man without animals.
Okay.
Yeah, fine, but the animals are a means to man. You know, so you could argue that, you know? And then you'd say, it's like, yeah, it's true, he wants animals, but he doesn't really want animals.
So, the ultimate purpose, like the only way in which Olam Hazeh is an end is for the Rasha? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying anything.
You could be saying that.
I'm just saying like that. You're just saying is that you're asking a question. Is that it can't be that you're going to get Olam Hazabah unless you have Olam Hazah. So I'm just saying is the fact that something might be a necessary stepping stone doesn't make it an end. So
right, which would then mean that the way that it is an end is for the
right. Okay.
For the Rasha's reward.
Okay.
And for otherwise, it's a means, and for other things, it's not. It's now its own intrinsic purpose.
Oh, I understand. But is it an ends for Russia? I mean, like, maybe he makes it so, but it's saying it says that God made it an ends for us. And then what's Olam Haba? Olam Haba is only an ends for, what about, you know, what Olam Haba for middle people?
What did you say?
What about Olam Haba for middle people? Would that care? Yeah, Beinonim, yeah.
Why does he say we're mostly Beinonim? We're all Beinonim.
Well, I guess he's saying it's in the previous Gemara, but the reason why I did it is because I feel like he's talking about Tzadik Gomor, Rasha Gomor, is kind of what he's talking about. But he's saying is because the Tzadik Gomor, it says, is somebody who is basically no entirely driven by his Yetzer Tov. And it's like his, it says, like his Yetzer Hara is like that. Basically, it's totally in control of the Yetzer Tov. And vice versa for the Rasha Gomor is somebody who's. It's hard to get them to basically say there's no God, no fear of God, as if there's no God, you know? So.
So it's like coming to us, see what those terms mean in the next.
Yeah, so now it says, so that's what it says, we're Beinonim. Because we're Beinonim means that we have both. It also says a Beinonim is someone who's ruled by both. So I guess Rav is saying is we're normal people and people are ruled by both. We have a conflict, right? A person's in conflict. It's sad words. Yeah, she's here now.
Yeah, should I get
in if it's offline? You want to just tell Tina, so I can help on that. You want to just give her your cell phone and tell her to call her home? Just forget it.
Well, you have to get it because your brother's here.
I know. So it's insane.
Are you on the phone?
Yes, there are three people on the chair. I'm saying you call her from your cell phone.
Oh, I see.
Strange, right?
Yeah.
Can I just ask you practical? At the beginning you said that you go to the source. Where did you go? Was that just continuing in the Gemara, or that was somewhere else?
I looked up where this Gemara, that statement was, because yeah. Someone told me about that statement, the Ivri Alma. So I found that statement, I found it in this Gemara. And this Gemara, we kind of took a look back from where the previous Gemara starts.
Okay.
You know, like, you kind of try to find the natural break, where it's like, it's one of the tricky parts of Gemara is
to find...
Maybe
just give a new context around that statement.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, right, exactly. And before that, it's really about other stuff a little bit. But it's a challenge sometimes to find out. I mean, a good tool is if you have an art scroll. They usually break it up and have new paragraphs, so they kind of help you, or like in Sifta or whatever. There's various things that help figure out where to jump, where's a good jumping in point. But here, I mean, it's like kind of the same time I'm around discussing it. It's a very related topic. And prior to that, it's like kind of a little bit different. Yeah. So, yeah. But that's whenever you look at Gemara, it's always good to kind of scope out the territory, you know, before, after, figure out where you're good, you know. Because if we just did that, like, it seems like this, for instance, a prior Gemara, which is prior, you may not have noticed it, but it happens to be it's telling us a little bit about what Tzadik Gomor and Rasha Gomor are. So that seems relevant. So even though it's not directly this, but that's part of the context, you know. So one thing which maybe we should pursue, maybe this is also a good methodology point, but Rashi brings up this thing, is like a Rasha Gamor. Like, instead of trying to get big picture, let's try to get small picture, let's try to analyze the various components. Okay, because the big picture, it's hard to figure out. But sometimes it's easier if you just try to take it apart piece by piece, you know? So... one thing he's mentioning is that a Rasha Gamor, so he only Olam Hazeh, because they don't have anything in Olam Haba. They're not getting anything in Olam Haba because of Rasha Gamor, but they have to get Schar. They get their Schar, so their Schar is in this world. So I guess the presumption is there is some Schar for them. Even Rasha Gamor does good deeds sometimes, right? And now God giving them Schar. And where is he giving them schar? Olam hazeh. So, maybe what can we say about that? I mean, that's interesting, right? I mean, we're kind of overlooking that because we're looking at the bigger picture, but that itself is an interesting thing to understand, right? Right? Is there anything to say about that or to notice about that? It's funny. It almost sounds like the Rasha is getting, you know, a great life. Sounds like in this world, right? So what's the first thing that's interesting about that?
I was actually just having this discussion with my friend the other day, and we were actually kind of like debating about that same idea of whether or not like Rishatim in this world do have some type of physical pleasure, and if they do, why should they even gain that slight benefit of having that pleasure? Like, I understand an Olam Haba why they want to get something, but why should they be so lucky to have something in this world?
Right.
You know, I mean, I understand also, like, let's say the average Beinoni or, like, even, like, a Tzadik sometimes does have physical pleasure in this world, and I guess that would also be in addition to reward in Olam Haba, but why per se should any type of Russia get any pleasure in this world?
Right.
Doesn't seem really deserving, or it kind of seems like the antithesis also, like the opposite. Like they're Russia, but no, like they're thriving in this world.
Right.
Also.
Yes. Good. New question. Yeah, I mean, there's also a little bit contradictory with the following, is that probably you've heard about this before, but there's a pasuk, for instance, that says, HaRashoyim Kayam Negrash. Rasham are like turbulent like the sea. Which means the life of a Rasha is not all fun and games. The contrary, it's a lot of frustrations, a lot of fantasies, a lot of fantasies crushed, and there's a lot of conflicts, like Haman, for example. You think, oh, look at that, he has everything. But you see, every moment he sees Mordechai Yehudi, he says it's worth nothing to him. So here it is, he has all this stuff, and there's a lot of peaks and troughs, and you know, it's like, it's not that easy a life. Like, it's like the sea is a good example. It's very turbulent, very painful and frustrating. So if you just think of a person, you know, from an outsider's perspective, you may say, look at that guy, he's got so much money, Yaakov is rolling in the dough. Yes, but oftentimes these people are killing themselves and on drug problems, and right? Doesn't seem like it's all that is cracked up to be. So is this Chazal portraying the idea, like the greatest enjoy, the great person who is the best life in this world is the Rasha? Is that the... I thought the Torah maintains even like the Torah is good for you in Olam Hazeh and the Olam Haba. Right? And the best life in this world is a life of moderation, a life where you kind of put in a certain medium amount of energy in this world and you can actually enjoy this world. Right? And you could enjoy it in moderation and that's really enjoyable. But if you pursue too much out of this world, it seems like it's a point of diminishing returns and conflicts and problems. And right? So it kind of goes against other Chazals and like, you know, plain thinking makes you realize that that's not the route towards really enjoying this world, it's just to become a Rasha. Right? Which is more in line, the truth would seem to be more in line with what Miriam's suggesting, is that the Rasha doesn't deserve the good world, and he doesn't really get it. And even though he tries to get it, somehow it doesn't quite work out the way that he wants to. You know, like, is a tzaddik who has a proper attitude, could enjoy this world more so than, right? Like the idea of Kedusha, right? I mean, a person who involves himself in taivas all day long, he's never satisfied. A person who involves himself in taivas on a limited, controlled, restricted basis, you can enjoy them. Huh? So is that the ideal here? The real ideal of Olam Hazeh is the guy who's really got all the wealth.
But he is getting what he values, though.
Okay, it's true.
You know, okay. He's making a mistake in what he's going to get out of it.
Right.
But he's getting what he
values. Okay, good. So let me go on that path. Is that it seems, and this may hopefully answer Miriam's question also, is that a Rasha is a Rasha. Rasha Gama. But this is what's fascinating about this point, is that God, there's a Chazal that says, Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu Mefakeach Schar Al Kol Be'er Be'er Yeh, which means, I forget exactly the word, but it means he doesn't like withhold schar for any creature. It means God is absolute mishpat. And God doesn't play favorites and say, this guy's a bad guy, forget it, I'm not giving you anything. You know, like a person who's, you know, But rather, But rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives schar. If a person does mitzvahs or good deeds or whatever it is, then God gives schar. And there's real justice. And just because a guy is bad in many regards, he's a Rosh Hashanah, doesn't mean he hasn't done isolated acts of tzedakah. And God doesn't say, since you're a Rosh Hashanah, I'm not going to reward you for those. Because that's part of justice is justice, absolute. So he deserves schar. Right? And God doesn't withhold it from him and doesn't say, like a human being, I think, would say that. Someone wrongs you, someone's whatever, you say, that's it. Cut them off, they're bad, they're evil, get rid of them, ignore them. They did good things, whatever. There's no such thing. They can't do any good. You know, that's some type of offense. A person who you hate can't do anything good. There's no such thing. Anything good they do, well, it's because, blah, blah, blah. You never reward them. When you see a Kodesh Baruch Hu's mishpat is absolute. And it doesn't, he's not sparing in his reward when it's due. Okay, but at the same time, what's he going to reward them? They are a Rosh HaGomor. So to say, well, he's not going to give them the ultimate tova of Olam Haba, Olam Haba. That's not, they've turned down Olam Haba. They've rejected Olam Haba. They're not interested in Olam Haba, and they don't deserve Olam Haba. But so the schar which he gives them is a schar in Olam Haza, which is, first of all, what they deserve and what they'll appreciate. Like you said, that's what they like. What do you think? Olam Haba? They're not interested in Olam Haba. You give them ideas, they're not that. They've turned down, their nefesh tells them there is no God. And they're totally uninterested, unrelated to in any way the values of Olam Haba. So they're immune to the aschar of Olam Haba. They have nothing to do with it. So where is God going to reward them? So you have to reward them in Olam Haza. And that's what's going to be meaningful to them. Now the question is like this. How do you reward them in Olam Haza? So like sometimes they'll say, you may have heard this statement, that, what do you get for somebody's birthday who already has everything? Right? You've heard of that? Like, there's a guy in my department who had a retirement party, and the guy who was speaking was saying, we try to think of something to get him, but he's a wealthy guy. But he already has everything. So what are we exactly going to give him? Look, if he has enough money, that whatever he wants, he's going to buy for himself. So how exactly are we going to even get him anything? Right? It's like a kind of a problem. How do you reward somebody? How do you reward a guy who has everything, or has... That's one dimension of it, who has everything. Or how do you reward a guy who's like, has at the peak of a taiva, who all his energy is in this world? It's not that easy to satisfy a guy like that. Right? A guy who's used to the high life, it's not that easy to reward. Or another example I thought once is a person who's like who drinks all the time. Let's say, at one point I realized this, it's like someone drinks beer all the time. So now they want to go to a bar. They can't enjoy themselves until they drink 10 beers and spend a lot of money, because it doesn't do anything. They build up a resistance. So how are you going to, in order to get through to them and to actually give them the enjoyment of the beer, I can enjoy one beer. They need to order 10 beers in order to actually be able to enjoy themselves. So it's hard. So the point is, it's hard to, someone who has all their energy and all of that builds up a high standard. And it's not that easy to satisfy them and to give them reward. What are you going to give them that's going to actually give them satisfaction? You give them something small, it's like you give a wealthy person a little lollipop for their birthday. He doesn't need that. It's not going to satisfy him. It doesn't help him in any way. So what are you going to do to reward such a person? So the only way to do it is to give him the height of Olam Haza. And God made the world in a way that there is such a pleasure available to a person like that. It could have been, the world simply doesn't have enough pleasure in it to reward a person like that. It's impossible. That's a possible answer. What can you get for such a person for their birthday? The answer could be nothing. It's simply impossible. That person's not going to be able to get a good birthday present. What are you supposed to do? That's the world. There's only X amount of pleasure which is available. This person's standard is already above that, and there's nothing you can do. But apparently it's not true. God designed the world in a way that there's a very high level of pleasure which could be attained from the world. And even a Rosh HaGomor could get his schar.
And that's what that means?
That's what that means. It's saying God made this world in a way that even a Rosh HaGomor could get his schar. Could, of course, everyone, lesser people, could also get rewarded. I thought of an example. Is like, I'm not sure how many people relate to this example, but it's whatever. It doesn't matter. But I thought of, like, this is what I thought of, like, the program, Microsoft Excel. So in Excel, it's like, it's a basic program which could just be used as a spreadsheet, but it could be used for powerful, powerful stuff. I mean, people use it for the world. I mean, it's like tons and tons of things which could be done with Excel. But a plain person could just use it as a spreadsheet, just to store a bunch of data, right? Right, you can make a bunch of whatever, right? Now, who do they design Excel for? Do they design Excel for me, who's just putting in my list of data, or do they design Excel for that guy? So the answer is they designed it for the heavy user. Why? Because if you design it for the heavy user, implicitly, you design it for the lesser user. The lesser user doesn't even know. I'm sure there are millions of people who use Excel that don't even know the first thing about how to write an equation or anything about it. But you could use it, and it's perfectly satisfying for your needs. It may run a tiny bit slower because it has such power in it, but who cares? So you design it, when you design something, you design it for the optimum user, for the person who's getting the most out of it. And implicitly, you'll satisfy the needs of the lesser person. Right? So when God designed Olam Hazeh, it could be it's saying is he designed Olam Hazeh in a way which everybody could take something from it, could take pleasure from it. Now, how do you do that? If you have in mind, as a proto-archetype, the Rosh HaGamor, the person who has all their energies in Olam Hazeh, then you design it for him in a way that he could get pleasure. Of course, ipso facto, everybody else, everyone lesser, is going to be able to enjoy this world. Because if he could enjoy it, then of course we could enjoy it. But it doesn't mean that God made it only for him to the exclusion of everybody else. It means he had him, so to speak, in his mind's eye when he made the world. It would be like a guy that says Microsoft designed Excel for that guy. What about me? Of course for you, for everybody. But you don't have to think of all the people at the same time. When you design it for the extreme guy, implicitly, it includes the other one. So it doesn't mean for only him, it means for even him. The world was only created for him, it means he made it in a way that could satisfy him. And that's enough. In terms of design, it's enough to have that person in mind, and implicitly includes the people, the lesser people. Okay. Similarly, on the flip side, in Olam Haba, is imagine you're designing like a university, where you're going to basically cater to people who are thinkers. And you have some people who are there. Now, the question is, like, how many hours a day do you want to have it open? Then how many books do you want to have in the library? Well, you got to have it to the maximum capacity. If there's a guy who's going to be learning 24 hours a day, well, you got to have it open 24 hours a day. If there's a guy who's going to be studying all different areas of science simultaneously, you have to have access to that. So saying in Olam Haba, God has designed Olam Haba in a way which is going to be able to talk to and satisfy even a Rav Chanina Mendoza, even a person who basically all his energies are in Olam Haba. He doesn't have any of his chayr in Olam Hazeh. All his chayr is in Olam Haba. So God has to make it, design Olam Haba in a way that will satisfy a person who is all, every ounce of energy of his is in Olam Haba. So if Olam Haba is not good enough, so to speak, then it's not going to be good for Olam Ruchin Mendoza. And there are people like Ruchin Mendoza, not many, but there are. So the parameters of Olam Haba, whatever this means, it's hard for us to talk about Olam Haba, but it's saying is God designed Olam Haba in a way which is going to satisfy even Ruchin Mendoza. And of course, the lesser of us will also be implicitly included in it. But it's just saying is that God's design of the world, and this is what I think is maybe the interesting point, the most interesting point of it all, it's so to speak that the Rosh HaGamor side, it's as if God wouldn't have had to make the world with so much pleasure in there. So what does he need to be able to get the highest level of pleasure that's possible? Why did he do it? Because there's a Rosh HaGamor, there's going to be a Rosh HaGamor who just chooses on his own free will to become a Rosh HaGamor. Because of the way he chooses, it's going to turn out, it could have, if God made it with less pleasure, it would turn out that a Rosh HaGamor is going to do certain small mitzvahs, and those small mitzvahs he's not going to be able to be rewarded for, and then he wouldn't end up having his just reward. So therefore God made it in a way that the world caters to everybody, and everybody's going to be able to have a just reward in it. And that's like, that was part of the plan of the Bria, is that the Rosh is going to be able to get that because that's justice, and God's making a world in a way which is capable of giving true justice to everybody. Right? Now, it could be that he means he's going to actually reward the Rasha Gamor by giving him these things, or it could just be set up the natural Teva in a way that Rasha Gamor is a good enough Rasha Gamor is going to be able to pull together these char and the riches and the whatever it is. It's not, you know, I don't want to be taking a stand on whether he's doing this actively by giving him reward or by he set it up in a way that lends itself to the person getting such reward. But either way, it sounds like it's saying that's part of God's cheshbon in the Bria is to include them.
What would the difference be? Why are you not saying one or the other?
I just don't know. It's a different discussion. Like someone's going to say, well, does God give reward to a Rosh HaGamor? Is there schar bonus? Is there schar to a person? What about Rambam maybe holds that God takes Rosh HaGamor and just leaves them up to loss of chance? So what do you mean that God's rewarding Rosh HaGamor? So I'm saying is, I don't know, that's a good question. Maybe God does directly reward Rosh HaGamor. Or maybe God wants a Rosh HaGamor to have justice, wants to have schar, and therefore he set up the world in a way originally that a Rosh HaGamor will be able to maximize Bispat Lazar and he'll get his schar. He will be able to get, you know, I don't know. That's like a different question about schar ba'onesh. This Gemara is certainly talking about schar ba'onesh for a tzaddik and for a rasha. And there is schar ba'onesh, kol ba'ayolam yarmul fanach, everyone, there's schar ba'onesh for everybody. How God, you know, dispenses his schar ba'onesh to different people is a different discussion, which, you know, I think is a different discussion. So that's why, you know, however that happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you say? Question, comment, thought?
Just clarify, it's not necessarily inherent in all systems that an extreme case that sets the parameter means that everything beneath it
is satisfied.
I mean, right, because it could just be very complicated, but in these cases that you're saying, right? Like, it could be that it's not like inherent in all systems that, you know.
No, I guess not.
Like, I'm just thinking of like a smartphone, right? Like, they put like a ton of capabilities in it. Sometimes that's just too much. They have like different settings. Like, I'm looking at smartphones for my mom. You know? they have like simpler settings, but somehow the way the design is that it is, you're able to take
scale down.
You know, to take from it in different scales. Because you know, not all systems are like that.
I guess it could be that some are not like that, but if they're well designed, they probably are. I mean, I don't know. You're right. I mean, it may not naturally be able to be. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess I had a similar question.
Yeah, can you think of an example? One second, can you think of a similar example? Because a smartphone is like that, or it's not. You're saying it's not like that,
but they have settings. Sometimes when something's loaded up with
too much stuff, it becomes impossible to use.
Someone who's on a simpler level can't use it.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah, right. I guess in this example, it is that way.
I mean, it does seem that in terms of pleasures of the world.
You just take less pleasure from it. Yeah, right.
There is just this.
Yes, right. Certainly, a person who puts less energy into it will be able to enjoy it. If even the person who puts all his energy into it will be able to enjoy it implicitly.
Right.
Yeah, right. Right. There's different types, different features of different designs, and it's not necessarily universal.
Right.
True. Yeah. That's fine. Yes, Tamar?
Yeah, I think I had the same question, on that premise in general, but if something's, you know, designed for the maximum user, that it will be accessible at every step of the way.
Right.
But I think that you're just kind of saying that in this case it is.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. There is a class of design items which are such that if you cater to the extreme user, you'll implicitly cater to the lesser ones. And this is that type. Right. Yeah. Yes, it would be an interesting study to figure out the parameter, when that is and when that isn't. That's interesting. You know, I don't know if anyone's ever analyzed that before. But
well,
it's, you know.
Isaac plays that card game, and I know that one of the things he loves about the magic, he said, you first learn how to play it, it's a really good game.
Oh,
you don't realize
levels
that there's all these levels of complexity and depth, and but it's worked out in a way where a more
plain
complex user
can
play with a new user, and then you don't even realize, you think it's great, and then you hit a new understanding
and
it scales in a way where
right.
I think the average user plays for like 9 years or
something.
Wow. That's
interesting.
But wow. Yeah. But I feel like that's very like humans aren't so good at
designing
things like that, but there's such a perfect system
But Excel is a good example of something like that though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. questions or comments? Okay, so I think just the takeaway here is, first of all, looking up the source. And then the way this answer emerged was kind of by nitpicking on that Rashi about the Rasha, that God has to reward him. Just that whole thing kind of started opening up a direction. And, you know, when you start pursuing that, one thing led to another, and you ended up, you know. So there are a few steps involved, but I'm just saying, I think that's like a good approach is sometimes to start small and try to work your way from the small particulars and try somehow ideas start opening up. But it's easier to think about particular small problems than to think globally, because there's a lot going on in the global picture. But if somehow you could, you know, allow the smaller problems to start pushing you and directing you towards a bigger picture solution, it's a good, you know, it's helpful. Right. But then when you do that, you realize it doesn't propose the problem, which it initially did. God only made it for them. But you realize that once I'm making it for them, you also implicitly make it for the other ones, then that's the point. Right?
They set the parameters for the design.
Yes, right. And that's what it says. And I think it's a good lashon. Lo every alma ella for them. He only made the world for them. Which means when he only had to have them in mind in the design. He only designed it for them. And then all the features which were put into the world for them were sufficient to be able to cater to all the other people. Not that he's only for them, that's crazy though. I mean, the whole world for those two people, it's the whole world of people, and everyone else is making them. The world's not only for them. Right? And also, he made the world only for Russia. That sounds crazy. Why is he making it only for Russia? Right? So it turns out, no. It just means, even it includes the Russia, and it ends up, you know. Yeah. All right. We good? Okay, Miriam, how you doing there?
I'm good.
Okay, great. Did I answer your question, yes?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, great. Okay, good question.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Take care.